Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Have you ever caught yourself wanting more money when you really know that you've got plenty? You ever found yourself rushing to buy the latest upgrade to some sort of gadget, even though you know the one you've got works perfectly well? Could it be that you are caught up in the vice of avarice, better known as greed? We're up to part four of our series on the seven deadly sins. Philosopher Rebecca Conyndike de Young is our guide, and we're going to talk about that tonight, avarice. And I'm looking forward to your comment too on 1300 40 2020. I'm sure that there'll be some confession to be had after we talk to Rebecca. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks again for your time.
I'm glad to be here.
We usually talk about avarice or greed in terms of money and possessions, but in the book, Glittering Vices, that you've written, you define it as a condition of the heart rather than, I guess, an attachment to any or a pursuit of any one particular thing.
Yeah, and I think that's important because it doesn't matter how much or how little you own, you can still be a greedy person. And so I think it's like with many of the vices, the outward behavior is not necessarily a giveaway to the condition of the heart. And so you have to be careful about reducing the vice to just how it looks on the outside. Avarice is really an inner excessive attachment to having things as my own. And so one of the more interesting definitions that Thomas Aquinas gives of avarice is avarice is the excessive love of money or of anything money can buy, because the things that money can buy are the things of which we feel we are most the masters. So it's that idea of myself as the master of my possessions, because I own it, I have it, I'm in control of it. That, I think, is the inner sort of heart condition behind this particular vice.
That notion of control is starting to pop up during this series, isn't it? We touched on it last week about sloth, and sloth wasn't laziness. It was actually an apathy towards really pursuing our relationship with God, even when it got tough. And that was that the issue of control came up there. If we're really going to surrender to God, we've surrendered control.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you use the notion of surrender. I mean, the vice behind all of the vices, as it were, the root of the tree of vices is pride. And the way that I define the seven vices as capital vices in the book are really prideful ways of trying to create happiness for ourselves, to say to God, I don't need your vision of what's good for me. I'll take my vision of what I want, and I'll go get it on my own. Thank you very much. And that is a way of being independent of God, keeping things under our own control, denying that we need to submit to Him and let be dependent on Him for everything that we need.
Yes.
And avarice is perhaps one of the more obvious ways that we do that.
Yeah. Okay, so avarice is an excessive love or desire for money or possessions or something that we can buy or own or possess because we can actually control it. Very fascinating. Now, this is going to hurt a bit, but we need to talk about some of the indicators that we might be slipping into this, window shopping and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's interesting that we can very easily think of this in terms of excessive acquisition, and that's certainly a painfully obvious and very American form of this vice.
We've got it too.
Yeah, everyone's got their share, I suppose. Mm. The idea that, you know, you need to acquire more and more and more and more, but the question is sort of what's the dynamic behind that? Why is it that the avaricious person can never have enough? What's behind that restless anxiety, that constant desire for more? And I think one of the more interesting things that Aquinas and many others in the tradition say is that when you're trying to fill an infinite need for an infinite good, when you're trying to fill your desire for God with finite temporal things, it will never be enough. Mm. And so you have to keep going back for more and keep going back for more and keep going back for more. So it's almost as though you're trying to find eternal security in temporal things that pass away.
Mm.
And it's a doomed project. Mm. But you can't see that what you're trying to fill it with is never going to be enough. And so you keep trying to get more and thinking just a little bit more will do the trick.
That is very, very insightful, isn't it? I think of the Bible passage that talks about avoid greed because it's idolatry. You know, you'd normally not connect greed with the worshipping of another god, but it actually is. If that's what you're trying to do, you're filling the god space in your life with things that you can control and, like you said, get your own eternal security right here on earth.
Right, and I do think that at the bottom of the greed problem is a trust issue. It's ironic, I think, that at least our American currency has In God We Trust on our very bill and our coins, on our currency itself. There, I mean, there's a lesson there, I think, for the avaricious, that what we're really doing is placing our trust in our ability to provide for ourselves. And, of course, money is the more obvious way to do that. And it doesn't have to be, you know, someone who makes a lot of money or is out to cheat other people. It really takes someone who really can't handle being dependent on God and trusting Him for providing what's needful. Mm. We're so eager to do that for ourselves.
Mm. This is Open House. Rebecca Kneindike de Young is with us, author of Glittering Vices. We're doing this series on the seven deadly sins. We're talking about avarice tonight, or greed, on 340-2020 for your comments. Now, we've mentioned before how not every one of the vices has a direct parallel opposite. But this one, could this one be one of the exceptions to the rule? I mean, is generosity the opposite to greed?
There are actually two, interestingly enough. You might think that the opposite, one opposite of taking more than your share is not taking more than your share. That is to say, giving everyone their equal due, and that would be justice. But if the internal problem is hanging on too tightly, then what you need to do is do something to loosen your grip. And by grip, I don't just mean the grip that your hands have, but the grip that your heart has on things. And for that, the remedy is generosity, giving away more than is due, giving freely, not because you're obligated to give something to someone else because it's their due, just to give over and above and beyond what's due. And so that can be a discipline that helps us, helps our heart free itself from being excessively attached to what we own as if it were ours.
There is something so liberating about generosity, isn't it? There really is, and maybe it's kind of breaking from that idol that we've talked about, like you said, that releasing the grip of our heart on the things that we own.
It is, and it, you know, if you think about the trajectory of greed, it's just the opposite. When you look at a person who delights in gift giving, who is looking for a gift that's just right for the person that they're giving it to, that gives so generously out of, you know, even, you know, over and above what would be expected in order to win the delight of the person that they're giving the gift to, that's a special attentiveness to the person that the generous person has. So money and the gift of money and the gift of things serves their love for the person and the joy that they take in loving another and expressing that love. Now, take the greedy person, and remember these are vices, so they're habitual dispositions, things that sort of, we get grooves that we get worn in our character. If you follow an avaricious person, what happens is that the money, which began as a means to feeling secure, becomes an end in itself, and people now are used to serve their greed.
Yes.
And so people just become another instrumental cog in the machine of a life devoted to money. And so for the generous person, the money serves the love for people, whereas in the greedy person, our love for people gets twisted into something that gets used to serve our own desires for more stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the natural response around about this point of the conversation is for us to say, well, hang along, you know, our little bit won't really make a great difference if we give it away, and charity begins at home, and all of those kinds of, you know, responses. Where do you think we miss the mark when we start kind of going down that path, at least mentally?
Well, you know, sometimes you just have to run a counterfactual. That's fancy philosophical terminology for a what-if statement. What if you had to give something away? How hard would it be for you? Would it be painful? Would it require complaining on your part? Would it require necessity wresting it from your grip? Or would you be ready and willing if the occasion arose? And I think the goal is to practice the kind of generous giving and parting with possessions and money and making sure that your mentality is that those are there to steward our relationships with other people. And if you're engaged in those kinds of daily practices, then when a large sacrifice comes along, it's a lot less painful than if you're constantly keeping to yourself, hoarding, thinking about your own stuff, thinking about how to get more. Then even the tiniest little demand on your generosity will feel like a great imposition. And so sometimes I have my students go through their college apartments and say, you know, what would be the hardest thing to give away and why would that be so? And that's just a good kind of mental exercise. You know, go through your closets every once in a while and think, you know, why is it so hard for me to give some of this stuff away? I haven't used it in years.
Yeah.
Why am I hanging on to it so hard?
Great exercise. Really interested in folks' comments on this one. 340-2020 in the previous weeks. We've had some, real open and honest sharing about the fact that some of these vices have gotten hold of us, and some folks have said, well, let me tell you the story of how I got free of it. Have you found yourself being really caught up in avarice or greed, as it's more commonly known, and you have found that liberation of generosity? What happened? Was it something, you know, like what Rebecca's talking about, some sort of exercise where you went through and said, we can't really live without this? I'd love to know the story. 1-300-40-2020. Philosopher Rebecca Canine-Dyke DeYoung is the author of Glittering Vices and our guide to the seven deadly sins, of which avarice is the one we're talking about tonight. You've talked a lot about Thomas Aquinas over the last few weeks as well. He's one of the classical spiritual writers who thought so much about the various vices and the various virtues. He had a definition between natural wealth and artificial wealth, which is probably helpful to bring in the conversation here too.
Yeah, that goes back to the idea that the avaricious person is always restless and always wanting more. So that the great lie here is that if you have a little more, it will be enough. And what Aquinas says about this is actually in the Treatise on Happiness, where he's talking about, you know, how to find happiness and human fulfillment. And he says, you know, some people think, money is the way to go after that and to find happiness and to be able to have everything that you need. And he says, you know, when it comes to natural wealth, it's a matter of what you need to survive. What does your body need? So, for example, when you're eating a meal, at some point you're going to feel full, and then you can say, enough. And at some point when you're sleeping, your body will be well-rested, and then you'll have enough sleep. So there's a natural definition of enough when it comes to meeting the needs of the body. But with respect to artificial wealth, he says, this is just a matter of luxuries that come on top of the things that we need. And there is no sort of natural limit to something that can be enough. You're going to end up wanting more and more and more and more. And again, part of the insatiability here is, I think, trying to make money do something for us, which it can never do, and trying to find security in something that can always be lost.
Well, you've already given us an example of something that you get your students to do, go through their wardrobes and their units and say, okay, what can I really live without? Give us some more ideas then of how we can actually break free from avarice. What else do you get your students to do? But your poor terrorized students, they must be some of the most virtuous.
Oh, are you kidding? They love this stuff. they're actually happy sometimes to descend out of theoretical philosophy and do something practical. So it might not be an onerous an exercise for them as it might be for you.
I bet you they're the most virtuous students around the whole of the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, one of the traditional practices to combat avarice is to tithe every single week, to practice giving stuff away. And in ancient Israel, the practice of the tithe was to give away the first fruits. So it's not as though that, you know, you get your paycheck and you make sure that you have enough to pay for the groceries and pay the bills. And, you know, if there's something left, well, then you'll throw that in the offering plate at church. The idea behind the practice originally was that you give God first, and then you trust that the rest will be sufficient because of his care for you. And so the act of tithing of the first fruits is an act that teaches trust. And the story of the widow of Zarephath in the book of Kings is instructive in this way, too. Elijah shows up at her door and says, there's a famine, I don't have anything to eat, make me a loaf of bread. And she says, well, I only have enough flour to feed me and my son. And if I make the loaf of bread for you, I don't get to eat, and neither does my child. Don't I have a primary responsibility to my child? And the prophet says to her, make the loaf of bread and trust that God will provide for you. And so she makes the bread, and the end of the story is that she gets a sort of daily manna from then on. The the jar of flour never runs dry, the jar of oil never runs dry until the famine is over. And so it's that kind of discipline, to give to God first, because it all belongs to Him anyway. Mm-hmm. And the point of Him giving income to you is to provide for your needs. God wants to take care of you. It's not as though, you know, maybe He will and maybe He won't, and you're not sure whether you can trust Him to do that. One other thing that I have my students try is to take a what I call a Sabbath rest from consumerism. And my 9-year-old son, who's a huge fan of Lego building blocks, had the habit of every time a catalog would come in the mail, and they start to send them more and more frequently, if you've noticed, if you're a catalog shopper, you notice this dynamic in their marketing techniques. Every time a new one would come, all the Lego sets that he had already would become boring, and he would crave the new one.
Yes.
Oh, we don't have this one yet. Let's get this one. So one year for his Lenten discipline, he gave up looking through Lego catalogs. Huh. So my students often pick one area in which they're engaged in lust of the eyes, as it were, looking at things that increase their wanting. And then to take a break from those things, to put them aside, to shut them out of your life, and to put something else there instead, a practice of contentment and rejoicing in what you already have, a delight in what you already own, and the people that you get to share those things with. So that kind of bracketing exposure to things that make you want more, that feed your greed, as it were, that can be a useful practical tool as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Rebecca, I'm so enjoying this. I mean, certainly self-examining myself afterwards, but absolutely fascinating stuff, and it's certainly getting us all thinking. Thanks again so much for your time.
Very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, we're talking through the 7 deadly sins: envy, vainglory, sloth, avarice tonight, anger next week. Gluttony and lust are still to come in the weeks ahead. Rebecca Kanindike de Young is a philosopher and author of Glittering Vices, a new look at the 7 deadly sins and their remedies.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.